I'd like to welcome all of you today to another in a series of podcasts by Wise River Advisors. Today we are going to discuss philanthropy and are going to explore some of the more popular vehicles that allow ultra high net worth families to achieve their philanthropic goals in a tax efficient manner, all while creating a lasting legacy for their families. Today we're joined by Casey Verst, Executive Director and Senior Wealth Strategist at UBS. Casey has spent multiple years in private practice as a trust and estate attorney, helping ultra high net worth families achieve their estate planning goals, and now works advising ultra high net worth clients of UBS. Casey, thank you so much for taking the time to explore this very important topic today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'll start, Casey. Thank you again for being with us. We're talking about vehicles for philanthropic giving, and the two primary vehicles that we see very wealthy families utilize are private family foundations and donor advised funds. Can you spend a few minutes talking about the distinction between the two?
Yeah, sure. So you're right. I mean, there's essentially three ways that individuals give to charity, right? You either give directly to the charity or you use these two vehicles, either a donor advised fund or a private foundation are the most common ways that individuals use. You can think of them, they're very similar, but very different. They're both vehicles where you can give money to charity, get a tax deduction, but the money doesn't really go directly to that charitable organization. It goes into a vehicle that you can somewhat control. A donor advised fund, you can think of like a charitable bank account where you put money in, it can sit there, be reinvested and grow, and then you decide at a later date what charity that money eventually goes to. The one specific requirement with the donor advised fund is that distributions out of the donor advised fund have to all be to another public 501c3 charity. So to a university, to a church, to the Red Cross, et cetera. At some point, that's where the money has to go eventually out of that donor advised fund. The difference with the private foundation is that a private foundation you can think of a little bit more like running your own charity. So if there are things that somebody wants to do with that money other than give to a public 501c3 charity, like they want to run their own charitable event, they would like to run a scholarship program, those type of things, then a private foundation is really going to make more sense for an individual or for a family. And of course, because it is run like a charity, there's a little bit more work that goes along with it, right? So sometimes people hear about how much work goes into a private foundation, how there's annual tax filings and requirements to keep the private foundation going. And the reason is because it is like running your own charity. And obviously running your own charity is going to be a little bit of work. So, doing it through a donor advised fund is sometimes a little bit easier. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a, high level overview of kind of the difference between the two.
It does. If I could just, as you advise the firm's wealthiest clients, what percentage of those clients are using donor advised funds and what percentage are going the route of the private family foundation?
I don't know that I could give you an exact percentage, but I will say there are more clients using donor advised funds for sure. They're very popular right now. And part of the reason is because they are very flexible as far as what assets you can use to fund in them. Pretty much any donor advised fund platform can take any illiquid asset at this point. There's less restrictions on how you can invest the money. There's less restrictions on how you're going to eventually have that money go to, or not less restrictions, but there's an ability in a donor advised fund to actually have it run like a foundation where you have successor advisors on the account, such as your children, who can eventually take over on the account and can distribute that money out to charities either that their children want to support or continue the giving that the parents have done during their lifetime. So in some ways, donor advised funds have become popular because they can essentially function like a private foundation. Some families actually even name their donor advised fund the Smith Family Foundation, so that it appears really on the outside when those donations are given that it's coming from a private family foundation, even though technically it's a donor advised fund. But I'll say that a lot of clients use both. I work with a lot of clients who use both a private foundation and a donor advised fund. One of the differences being that in a donor advised fund, you can actually give anonymously. So sometimes for families that have a private foundation and want to do larger giving where their name is attached to it, but also have some giving where they don't necessarily want to have their name attached to it. They don't necessarily want that organization or other organizations to know that that's where the money's coming from and to be hounded by other charities to, you know, get more donations. So sometimes people use donor advised funds for that reason. The other reason, and I think we'll get to it, is the deductibility limitations are a little bit different on the two. So sometimes families use both a private foundation and a donor advised fund in order to maximize their income tax deductions in a given year.
Casey, do you find that families that have larger philanthropic goals that are, you know, giving more tend to use foundations rather than donor advised funds? Or are you seeing more and more now that families are using donor advised funds for greater and greater philanthropic gifts?
Yeah, I think that that's generally the rule and kind of the history in general is that private foundations, if a family is going to give, you know, $10 million, $15 million, $20 million above that to a charitable entity, private foundations have historically been the better vehicle to use because they can be a little bit more flexible as far as, again, being able to run your own charity, right? You can not only use a private foundation as essentially a giving vehicle to other 501c3s, but you can also eventually run your own event. You can run costs through the foundation, right? So that's another reason that private family foundations are still popular for the larger gifts, for larger wealthy families, is that your children can eventually serve on the board of the foundation and get paid for the work that they do for the foundation. If there are costs associated with, you know, flying to a location to, you know, look for an art gallery or a location for an event that you're going to run, all those costs can be run through the foundation, again, because you're essentially running your own charity. So because of that, the larger gifts sometimes do make more sense in a foundation, right? Because if you're going to only put, and I guess I shouldn't say only, but if you're going to be putting $1 million in a foundation and you're going to have all these costs associated with it that are going to run through it, you have to file tax returns every year and you have to pay accounting fees and legal fees for upkeep and maintenance, that $1 million is going to be eaten up a little bit faster, right? So in some ways it does. And it does make more sense when the larger gifts are in the foundation. But I do have clients ask me, you know, is there a minimum amount? And there really isn't, right? There really isn't. It's not like there's a minimum for a foundation or a minimum for a donor advised fund. It's just that the money that you put into that foundation sometimes can be eaten up a little bit more with costs. So the larger gifts do make more sense, especially if it's a really long-term legacy family gift that you know your children, grandchildren, other family members are going to be involved in and want to work for the foundation. In that sense, then it could make more sense in a foundation to have that be a larger, a long-lasting gift.
So let's distinguish then. You've done a great job of giving us the difference and explaining the difference between a family foundation and a donor advised fund. But let's focus a minute here on the donor advised fund and just go sort of from a very sort of high level. You know, how do these work? How do you set them up? You know, and how are they administered?
Yeah. So the donor advised fund, and this kind of gets back to the reason that I think some clients use donor advised funds more often, the donor advised fund setup is very easy. Like I said, it's kind of, you can view it like a charitable bank account. So the setup is essentially like filling out paperwork to open a bank account, and then you transfer cash, securities, other assets into this charitable bank account. So it's pretty easy to set up and very easy to administer. So technically, the donor advised fund, there are organizations that run donor advised funds that you technically are giving the money away to, but you are an advisor on that account. So two of the partners that we work with at UBS is Fidelity Charitable and National Philanthropic Trust are two of the larger partners we work with. And so technically, when you're opening this bank account and putting the money in, you're actually giving the money away to Fidelity Charitable, which is a public charity, or to National Philanthropic Trust, which is a public charity. But you have this separate bank account that you are the advisor on, that you're essentially running. The good news on that part is that all of the maintenance and paperwork and filing on an ongoing basis is all done by Fidelity Charitable and National Philanthropic Trust. So once you open that account, and you can add more money to it at any time, but once you open that account, you're essentially done. I mean, at some point when you want to direct money out of it, you go online, you choose the charity that you want to give the money to. Usually they're already a charity that's involved, that Fidelity Charitable or National Philanthropic Trust is familiar with, the Red Cross, the university you went to, whatever it is, you direct the money out of there. If it is a newer 501c3, your friend started, or you have a family member that has a 501c3 you want to support, Fidelity or National Philanthropic Trust will sort of do the research for you and determine whether or not it actually is a qualified public charity that you can give money to. So on an ongoing basis, they're very easy. A private foundation, again, because it is essentially like running your own charity, does have a little bit more setup cost. You're essentially paying an attorney to draft the formation documents. They're either set up as a corporation or as a charitable trust. You're paying an attorney to set that up, and then you're paying a little bit for the ongoing maintenance. Essentially, it's the main thing is ongoing tax returns, and potentially at some point, if there are investments or income within the foundation that are large enough, you know, you're potentially engaged in audits with the California Franchise Tax Board to make sure that, again, everything is being done above board, right? Because you're a charity. So you're regulated by the state, you're regulated by the IRS. So there's some ongoing maintenance to that. But the setup is, in my mind, as a lawyer, not as complicated as people would think, because it's essentially just paying your attorney to draft a trust. And once that's signed, once you get your letter from the IRS that you are qualified as a charity, that you're going to be focused solely on charitable purposes and charitable giving, you get your letter from the IRS approving that you are a tax deductible organization, then the ongoing maintenance of it can be fairly straightforward. And the other thing that I'll say too is the reason that with a lot of the clients we work with, the ongoing maintenance of private foundations can also be straightforward is because we have a partner called Foundation Source that focuses solely on this exact space. Their sole mission and goal is to help make private foundations easier and less of a headache for clients. So for clients who have a private foundation or are starting one and know that it's really something they would want to do, but the only hesitation is this ongoing maintenance of tax returns and filings with the IRS and making sure that if they are do have a child on the board, that they're getting paid an amount that's not going to cause the IRS to, you know, assess penalties, any of those kind of things, that is exactly what Foundation Source does. They take all that administrative burden off of a client and help them manage it and help advise them on how to run it on a going forward basis. So that might've been more than you wanted, Mark, but hopefully that answers the question as far as kind of the setup and maintenance of them.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
So we touched on it earlier, Casey, the tax deductibility of gifts to both donor advised funds and foundations. We would typically advise clients when making gifts to philanthropy to use appreciated assets, the benefit being that you avoid paying the tax on the embedded capital gain of those appreciated assets. And at the same time, you get a full charitable deduction. But there are limitations on the amount that you can give when gifting appreciated securities. Can you talk through that for both the foundation and a donor advised fund?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the private foundation since those are the lower limits. So for a private foundation, if you're giving cash to the private foundation, you're limited for an income tax deduction of up to 30% of your adjusted gross income. So
per year,
exactly, on an annual basis. So sometimes clients get that confused where they think, oh, everything I put in, I only get a deduction for 30%. So that's not right. So you get a deduction for everything you put in, but only up to 30% of your adjusted gross income. And that's for cash. For appreciated securities, which, like you said, are fantastic assets to use for gifting to charitable entities, because you can, for the most part, get a deduction for the fair market value of the stock on the date that you give it. And then when the charity turns around and liquidates it, they don't pay any income tax on the liquidation event. The deduction limitations because of that benefit are slightly lower. The IRS gives you slightly lower deductibility limitations. So in a private foundation, it's up to 20% of your adjusted gross income. And you can layer those, right? So somebody with a private foundation can give appreciated securities up to 20% of their adjusted gross income and then top it off with an additional, you know, 10% of cash to try and maximize their deduction. And for donor-advised funds, the deductibility limitations are higher, again, because you're only giving to other public charities. So the IRS is sort of incentivizing taxpayers to use those more rather than have a private foundation. And in a donor-advised fund, if you give cash, you can get a deduction for up to 60% of your adjusted gross income. And for appreciated securities, it's up to 30% of your adjusted gross income. And the other thing that I just want to say quickly on kind of the ability to use certain assets to fund into a donor advised fund or private foundation. And I kind of touched on this earlier with donor advised funds being a little bit more flexible. And I think I said from an investment perspective, what I meant was from a donation perspective is if you have a private company that you run and you're trying to do some charitable giving before potentially you sell the company, for example, donor advised funds can accept private company stock for the most part. They're usually pretty flexible about being able to do that. And again, you can get the fair market value deduction for your stock, and then when the stock is sold, not have to pay any income tax on that liability. Whereas with a private foundation, there are actually restrictions on your ability to use private stock in a company that you control to be able to put into a private foundation because the IRS is sort of making sure that wealthy individuals and families aren't taking advantage of the system and using it as their own personal pocketbook. So when you use private company stock of a company that you own or control, you are limited to the lesser of your basis or fair market value of the stock. So it's usually going to be the basis, right? So private company stock is usually not the best to use for a private foundation, which is why you see marketable securities being more used, marketable securities or cash to be able to use within a private foundation.
So we're seeing, Casey, the landscape for taxation is evolving with the new administration, and it is anticipated that next year income taxes for individuals will be going up, and capital gains taxes as well probably will be going up. Do you have any thoughts about the appropriateness of waiting until next year, when we're going to see higher taxes to make these charitable donations? Or do you think it doesn't make a difference? So you just, when you're ready to make the gift, you make the gift. What are your thoughts regarding that?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the client's goals, their long-term goals, and how much they plan on eventually giving to one of these vehicles, a donor advised fund or a private foundation. I mean, if this is a large, long-term family legacy, they plan on leaving even on their passing a certain amount to one of these entities for their children to be able to give, they're going to be giving a lot of money every year to charity, then I don't think it necessarily makes sense to wait until next year, just because capital gains tax rates might be going up and you might get a larger deduction for it, or I guess, be able to offset more of the tax liability because you're going to have a larger tax liability. I don't think I would advise somebody necessarily to wait just because capital gains tax rates are going up. But if somebody knows that they're going to give $1 million total, and they're either going to give it this year or they're going to give it next year, and their adjusted gross income is essentially going to be the same in both years, then maybe it does make sense to wait until next year when we think that capital gains tax rates are higher, right? Because if you're going to have to, if you're going to have a large gain next year, similar to this year, you're going to be offsetting that regardless. It might make sense for you to wait to get the larger benefit if your tax rate's going to be higher. All of that caveated with, clients should definitely be talking about it with their CPA, trying to figure out exactly what their tax liability they think is going to be, what their deduction would be, depending on what type of assets they're going to use. So it's definitely something to keep in mind, I think, in general for any client, right? Anytime you're giving, you want to be coordinating with your tax advisors to make sure that you're maximizing the deduction to the extent that you can. And one little last thing I'll say on that is those tax deduction limitations that we talked about, if you go over that amount, you can carry forward charitable deductions that you can't use in a year for the next 5 years. So there is at least some silver lining that if for some reason you do a lot of charitable giving and you don't end up having the income tax liability you thought you were going to have, and it goes unused in that year because you've gone above that deductibility limitation, you can carry it forward for 5 years if you need to.
Casey, the partners on Wise River Advisors manage money within many private foundations and for many donor advised funds. And one of the great benefits that we see using these vehicles goes beyond purely philanthropy. It's oftentimes by our clients used as a legacy vehicle, as a mechanism to keep families together, that clients can create something that is perpetual, that lives longer than they will. And it's a tool to bring families together. Can you talk a little bit about your experience in that and if you see it that way as well?
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that's a great point. And I do talk to clients a lot about that. I mean, a lot of wealthy families are concerned about the long-term effect that their wealth will have on their children in the long run, right? That, you know, I focus a lot on philanthropy and work with clients, but my main focus is on estate and gift tax planning and wealth transfer planning. And I talk to clients a lot about trying to maximize wealth to children and grandchildren and use your money in an efficient way to try and, again, maximize wealth transfer to your family rather than to the IRS. And a lot of clients have concerns. And I think philanthropy is a great way to engage your children in trying to use this money for good. And donor-advised funds and private foundations can be fantastic ways to be able to, on an annual basis, on a quarterly basis, sit down with your children and really at any age, right? I mean, even young children, right? We're not necessarily talking about adult children, but even younger children, you know, hey, what are things that you see in the world that you would want to be better, right? What are things, how do you think this money should be best employed? Are there causes that you care about? Are there organizations that you care about? Are there organizations that you've heard about, that you've seen on the news, that you think are doing good work that you would want to support? And I've even seen families sort of have like an annual meeting. A lot of times they do it around the holidays. So, you know, maybe in December, they have a meeting where they task their children with doing research on different organizations or causes that they care about and coming forward essentially to their parents with a proposal, like a proposal for a donation. You know, this is the organization. This is what they do. This is the impact that I've seen that they've had. You know, this is their Charity Navigator report that shows, you know, how much money actually goes to charity versus goes to the, you know, people that run the charity. And they use that as an opportunity to sit down with their children and really engage them in it. It's a fantastic way for your children not only to learn that the money that they're eventually going to inherit or money in this private foundation or donor advised fund can go to good work, but also just to teach them good values, right? That there are a lot of other needy people and other organizations out there and causes that this money can be employed to help. And it's a great way to use it. And both a donor advised fund and a private foundation can really be vehicles for that. Because like I said, you historically private foundations have kind of been the route for the long-term legacy planning for a family where your children will eventually take over as directors of the foundation, et cetera. And with a donor advised fund, you can function similarly, where you are the advisors during your lifetime and you can have your children be successor advisors and continue the legacy of giving after you're no longer around. So involving them in that giving during your lifetime, you know, better employs them to be able to take over once the parents are no longer around.
So I think this has been a really interesting discussion around two very popular ways of giving, the donor advised fund and the private family foundation. What are some of the other vehicles that are available to ultra high net worth families that might be in other situations? Maybe they're contemplating selling a company. Maybe there are certain specific situations about moving money down to the next generation where you can be philanthropic, but also, you know, move money down to the next generation. What are some of the other vehicles that are available to families for philanthropy in those situations?
Yeah, so the most common ways other than direct giving to these entities that I see clients utilize, one is called a charitable remainder trust. The other is called a charitable lead trust. So they're estate planning vehicles that clients can use to help fund their charitable goals. And you hit the nail on the head, Mark, when you said when clients are potentially selling a business, because that is the most common situation that I do see charitable remainder trusts being utilized. And it's essentially a vehicle where you fund a certain asset into this trust. It's an irrevocable gift you're putting into a charitable trust. It's a tax-exempt entity, a charitable remainder trust is, so that when that asset is sold within the charitable remainder trust, there's no income tax liability in the year that it's sold. And the grantor, the one who funds the trust, receives an annuity payment off of that trust for a certain number of years or for the rest of their life. And as the name of the trust indicates, the remainder trust, the remainder interest in the trust, whatever's left at the end of the day, because the money after the asset sold can be reinvested. The money at the end of the day that grows is tax-free within the entity. And the remainder interest goes to charity at the end of the day and can be a private foundation or donor advised fund, or there's flexibility within the trust to be able to potentially change the charitable beneficiary over time. So that is one way that clients utilize it, because charitable remainder trusts are essentially a tax deferral vehicle where those annuity payments that you're getting over time are taxable income to you, the grantor, but they're able to defer that tax liability over 10 years, 20 years, the rest of their life in the form of those annuity payments, but allow the tax-free growth to eventually go to charity and help, you know, support their charitable goals. And the charitable lead trust is in some ways the reverse. It's a totally different strategy, but it's essentially you're funding an asset into a charitable trust that the lead interest, the annuity payments, are going to charity every year, again, which could be private foundation or donor advised fund. And then the remainder interest goes to your children. So a charitable lead trust is a little bit more of an estate tax, estate planning vehicle that clients utilize to try and make a gift to their children without using their estate tax exemption amount. And a charitable remainder trust is more of a tax deferral vehicle for you, the grantor. But they're both vehicles that clients utilize to try and fund, again, either their private foundation or their donor advised fund in different ways. I tried to give a high level overview of those. I mean, I could probably talk for a half hour about each of those types of vehicles in general, but I'll just throw them out there as a little teaser that those are kind of the other common trusts, you know, estate planning vehicles that I do see clients utilize to fund these vehicles.
We appreciate that. And will definitely be a topic for another podcast to go into those vehicles in more detail.
So I would say, for the benefit of our clients who are listening or watching this podcast, Casey is a resource that's available to you. He is a partner to our team and works advising our clients on all issues related to philanthropic giving, wealth transfer, estate tax planning, and issues related to those subjects. So if you have an interest in a donor advised fund, a private family foundation, a charitable lead trust, charitable remainder trust, we're certainly also available to have private conversations with each of you to discuss these in more detail. And Casey, as always, we appreciate your expertise. We appreciate your time. And we hope and expect those that are listening appreciate it as well.
Thank you so much for your time, Casey.
Thank you so much. Take care.